Okay, yesterday's school shooting in Parkland, Florida, left at least 17 people dead and 14 others injured. Authorities say shots began ringing out at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shortly before students were supposed to be dismissed for the day. The gunfire reportedly began about 2:30 in the afternoon as fire alarms started going off. Florida Senator Bill Nelson told MSNBC it was the shooter who pulled the alarm so kids would come out into the hallways and he could shoot into the crowd. Nelson said the shooter wore a gas mask and had smoke grenades. When deputies arrived at the school, hundreds of students were already fleeing. According to the Broward County Sheriff's Office, the suspected 19-year-old shooter concealed himself in the crowd and was among those who were running out of the school. The Sheriff's Office says 15 victims died at the school. Two more died at the hospital, and right now investigators are working to identify all of the victims.
Whenever these things happen, I'm always somewhat disappointed that the shooter ends up killing themselves. So I go, man, if they were alive, perhaps we would be able to get some sort of insight into why they did what they did. Perhaps they would talk. Well, this guy lived. And thinking about that, I've remembered several other shooters that lived. And actually, we don't tend to gain any more insight. And this shooter in particular, whose name I've chosen not to mention, let's hope that he dies and is remembered for absolutely nothing. This shooter in particular, after he was caught and he went to court, he said, I am so sorry. So sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, children are ours. We decide to become parents. Well, most of us decide to become parents. Sometimes we just become parents and it's not necessarily what we signed up for, but a lot of us will take that duty just the same. And as such, we are responsible for the kids. It is up to us to teach the kids. We say, hey, we're the adults. We've been here longer. Let me tell you about this wondrous world into which you find yourself. And they are supposed to learn from us. But post this incident, we are learning from them.
I don't want something like this ever to happen again. I want us to take action. And I don't want this just to be another mass shooting. I want this to be the last mass shooting.
I feel like he really needs to take into consideration all this gun control. There's no reason that a kid 19 years old that's been investigated already and not even a year ago being able to purchase an AR-15.
As much as I'd like to focus on mourning and like to focus on everything that's wrong, right now, we're in a state where we're being led by Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. I want them to know that they're going to feel this in the polls. That's a promise. I genuinely believe that this is the end for them.
This can't keep happening. There's so much wrong with this. I don't know how I'm ever going to get past this.
This has happened in elementary schools. This has happened in colleges. This has happened in middle schools. This has happened in other high schools. But for some reason, this high school in particular seems to be a little bit different.
I just prepared to die.
It comes as those caught in the gunfire are sharing their stories for the first time. English teacher Dara Haas was in the first classroom targeted by Cruz.
So at first you thought this was just the drill?
I thought it might be the drill, and I went to shut the blinds, and then I turned to say, turn the lights off. And when I turned, I saw my student. I saw him, and he was bleeding.
14-year-old Alex Schachter had been shot.
And my students, they were so brave.
Haas grabbed her cell phone.
And I called 911, and they asked if I could help. I could get to my student that was injured, and I couldn't get over to him. And then 911 said, he's coming back. Because he already shot my room twice. Wasn't that enough? But no, he's coming back. And I figured, if I have to go, I'm going to hug my students closer. And I kissed my students on their head and, you know, trying to comfort them.
Schachter and two more students, 14-year-old Alina Petty and 14-year-old Alyssa Alhadef, were killed in her classroom.
It's so hard to grasp that I lost their sweet little faces.
One building over, amid the chaos,
I was locked out of all the classrooms.
16-year-old 11th grader Jack McLeod trapped in a hallway with nowhere to hide.
And you couldn't get in that first door.
I could not get into that classroom.
Then a math teacher, the kids call Mama Trezino, did what she was trained never to do.
I broke protocol. So I opened my door and looked out, and here's a group of children with an adult, and he goes, "Can we come in?" I said, "Everybody, come in as fast as you can."
At 65, Mary Trezino is a year away from retirement.
I turned to the kids, and I said, "I want you to know that if anybody comes through that door to harm you, they have to come through me. I will be the first offense. They will have to shoot me to get to you, and maybe that will give you a chance."
It would be 90 minutes before the SWAT team finally came to their rescue.
Sounds like this are pure horror to me. Horror. Not the kind you see in movies, the cartoon stuff, real live horror. And when I initially hear these news clips and then decide that I'm going to cut them. And I listen to these clips probably 10 different times before I finally put them on the show, looking for different things, trying to make sure that they're cut just right. And so I hear this stuff a lot. And I planned this show more than a week ago, but the stress associated with just hearing this stuff. And see, that's a normal human response. That's what you're supposed to do with this kind of horror. It's supposed to shock you. It's supposed to terrify you. And it's supposed to inspire change. But what I've learned from many members of the United States Republican Party, and definitely the NRA, for them, this stuff is pure pornography. And then let's talk about the president, who's decided to just, maybe we can arm the teachers. What a fabulous idea. Let's arm the damn teachers. We'll get to that in a minute. These kids started speaking out, and it really started catching people's attention. Here's the thing about the gun debate. I've been involved in politics for a long time. I've been discussing it. I've been doing this show for about 6 years now. And whenever I approach this subject, I approach it in a way that hopefully I can convince some reasonable people. Hopefully I can plant a seed, put an idea in your head. You know, maybe it'll grow. Maybe. And there I try all sorts of things to make the message stick. And I do that because I've been involved in this for so long now that I know what the rules are for this debate. And I try to follow those rules. And what the kids are doing, and this is what's fabulous, what the kids are doing is they don't know those rules. They don't know what you can and cannot say. They've not been a part of this debate. And so they simply say what's on their mind. And that scares the hell out of not just Republican politicians, but the NRA. And so what they immediately do is they put out an ad to deflect.
Saying that people in the media wish for the deaths of innocent people. I don't believe that at all. But the truth of the matter is, if there's one organization in this country that has a vested interest in the perpetuation of mass tragedy, it is our mainstream media. It's becoming so disgusting that these kids running out of these schools see microphones in their faces before they see their parents. And what these kids don't realize is that they are now being forced to play a part in a multi-million dollar international production. Look at the way they react when they think there might be another shooting. Like a bunch of vultures circling a dead carcass, salivating, waiting on the next town to feed on. If there's even a rumor of a report of a shot fired, the helicopters are circling overhead immediately with tense aerial shots of what they truly hope is a murder scene. You, the mainstream media, just put out the casting call for the next mass shooter.
So that's what's causing all of the mass shootings. The fact that they are covered by our media, that's what's causing all the shootings. Now that we know that, now we can stop covering the shootings. Shootings are happening every single day. School shootings are happening just about every single day. But we have a threshold for what we call a mass shooting or what we call a school shooting. One or two people get shot. We don't generally hear about it. So there's already a cycle threshold for this kind of stuff. And they say, no, it's got to be a certain number of people that are killed before we'll start covering it. But what the NRA is saying is it needs to stop being covered at all. That way, you don't know that it's happening. Back during the 90s, there was something passed by called the Dickey Amendment. And the guy that it's named for, Senator Dickey, is no longer in the Senate anymore. So this thing's more than 20 years old. And what it does is it forbids Health and Human Services and any other government agency from tracking gun violence. That way, nobody knows how much this stuff happens. All of the stats that we have with respect to gun violence are only because of the hard work that the media does to count this stuff and point it out to us and say, hey, there is a clear trend here. But if you listen to the NRA and their membership, no, no, no. The problem is that we're covering these things.
Many in legacy media love mass shootings. You guys love it. Now, I'm not saying that you love the tragedy, but I am saying that you love the ratings. Crying white mothers are ratings gold to you and many in the legacy media in the back. And notice I said crying white mothers because there are thousands of grieving black mothers in Chicago every weekend, and you don't see town halls for them, do you? I'm really looking at a lot of the legacy media back there on the platform, and you can write whatever you want about me, and you can come find me in the hallways, and you can scream at me, and you can try to confront me, but I'm here, we're not going anywhere. I call BS.
So, of course, Dana Loesch is co-opting a slogan that the kids from the Florida high school have been using, calling BS, trying to make it a rallying call for the murderers over at the NRA. So that's Dana Loesch speaking at CPAC. And of course, blaming it on your media needs to stop covering these things. The legacy media. Okay, so she says, crying white mothers are ratings gold. And it sounds right. Right? Is it, if it bleeds, it leads, as the old saying goes. Crying white mothers are ratings. Okay, let's talk about that. I was watching CNN recently, and they were interviewing Dana Loesch, and they said, Dana, we love mass shootings, huh? She goes, well, of course you do. Ratings gold. And it was pointed out to her by the anchor. She goes, this stuff happens so much that it does not spike ratings anymore. People are so burnt out on this stuff that it doesn't even register with a lot of people anymore. The fact that these kids are coming out and saying something and trying to inspire change is something new because so many people got so complacent about it, they don't even turn their heads when they hear about a mass shooting unless it's somebody that they know because it's really just another day in America. So no, the media is not reaping any beneficial rewards, any financial remuneration from these school shootings. The only people that are getting any financial remuneration from these school shootings is the NRA and the senators that they buy. That whole white mother, black mother thing. Okay, so conservatives love to do this. The black mothers in Chicago, they love black people so much. They're busting their ass from coast to coast to strip them of their right to vote. So there's an article by Clay Kane titled, What Does Dana Loesch Know About Grieving Black Mothers in Chicago? Quoting from the article here, let's be clear. The guns that plague cities from Chicago to Philadelphia flood in from states where loose gun laws, such as Arizona, Utah, Mississippi, Alabama, Indiana, Kentucky, in many cases, these firearms are bought at gun shows, transferred over the state lines, and sold via straw purchases to criminals. These guns cause havoc in communities of color, which Loesch does not know a damn thing about. Does the NRA believe that gang members in crime-ridden cities are manufacturing guns in the basement? Via gun shows and astounding access to weaponry, the NRA and gun owners profit from this awful trade. Who had a license to carry? Excuse me. Even as gun victims die in cities like Chicago. Now, one other thing. We should arm the teachers. Let's arm the teachers. Get the teachers. Let's arm the teachers. Philando Castile was a teacher. Philando Castile was the guy who was pulled over by a police officer. Philando Castile had his gun registered. He had a license to carry. And when the police officer pulled him over, he said, "Officer, I have a gun on me. I also have a license for that gun." And the officer said, "License and registration, please." And when Philando Castile went to reach for it, blam, 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 he died right on Facebook Live. His girlfriend filmed the incident. So they want to arm teachers. But remember, white people are mad frightened of black people with guns. When Ronald Reagan was governor of California, he got behind an assault weapons ban. After a number of African-American Black Panthers showed up to the state house with their, hey, they were just exercising their Second Amendment right. No, they were black people with guns, and that scared the hell out of that little snowflake, Ronald Reagan. And it wasn't but a week, maybe 2 weeks later, that there was an assault weapons ban in California via Ronald Reagan. Saint Ronald Reagan.
Do you have anybody that could have done anything anyway? Or how many people are still trying to prove after a year and a half here that Trump colluded with Russia? How many people still tracking down Hillary Clinton's opposition research? In fact, folks, I'll tell you, if you want to blame Trump for this, I could just as easily turn it around and blame it on Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton and the Democrats have the FBI so occupied tracking down something that didn't happen, they may not have the resources to pull this kid off the street. How does that sound to you leftists? Absurd?
So the FBI hotline, which is located in Virginia, gets about 2,200 calls a day. And based on what kind of calls come in, they send those calls out either to A, the 50 different field offices in all 50 states. And then, of course, those field offices in that particular state handle it. And if it's not an FBI issue, then they reach out to local law enforcement in those states. 2,200 calls a day that they are taking. And so it's quite a bit before it gets around to the people that it's supposed to get to. And the FBI is working to try to find a way to streamline that and try to encourage people, hey, if you've got an issue, it may not be an FBI issue. You should probably call your local police first. So there's a real reason why the FBI never got around to this kid, even though there were a lot of tips. But if you listen to the conservative media, and it's not just Rush, you listen to the conservative media, the reason that they never caught this kid is because they're too busy trying to prove something that never happened about Trump. And oh yeah, by the way, this entire thing, it pissed Rush off that the kids... Trump is tweeting out, because he's a child, he's tweeting out thoughts and prayers and all the rest. And these kids are tweeting back things like, F you, burn in hell, you POS. And they're well within their right to do that kind of thing. And so the conservative media never misses the opportunity to go, oh, those kids aren't really going through a hard time. This is all about Trump.
Because this issue of getting rid of Trump, even the Florida shooting is about that. The aftermath of the Florida shooting. You can see news stories where the people in Florida don't want Trump to say anything. They don't care about Trump's compassion. Drive-bys are trying to blame Trump for this in any number of ways. So the focus of the American left, the Democrat Party, regardless the issue, remains getting Donald Trump.
I never particularly cared for George W. Bush. Generally, when it came to one of these massacres, even though he didn't do anything, he was able to still get on the microphone and really, at least it sounded like it came from his heart. I remember after the Virginia Tech massacre.
Schools should be places of safety and sanctuary and learning. When that sanctuary is violated, the impact is felt in every American classroom and every American community. Today, our nation grieves with those who have lost loved ones at Virginia Tech. We hold the victims in our hearts. We lift them up in our prayers. And we ask a loving God to comfort those who are suffering today.
So Trump hears that and says, you know what? I bet you I can do the same thing.
I want to speak now directly to America's children, especially those who feel lost, alone, confused, or even scared. I want you to know that you are never alone and you never will be. You have people who care about you, who love you, and who will do anything at all to protect you. Later this month, I will be meeting with the nation's governors and attorney generals. We're making our schools and our children safer will be our top priority. It is not enough to simply take actions that make us feel like we are making a difference. We must actually make that difference.
So Trump went ahead and decided to have that listening session. And I'm going to play a couple of clips from it.
How many children have to get shot? It stops here with this administration and me. I'm not going to sleep until it's fixed. We can't forget about it. All these school shootings, it doesn't make sense. Fix it. Should have been one school shooting, and we should have fixed it. And I'm pissed because my daughter I'm not going to see again. She's not here. She's in North Lauderdale at whatever it is, King David Cemetery. That's where I go to see my kid now. I'm never going to see my kid again. I want you all to know, never, ever will I see my kid. That's how I want it to sink in. It's eternity. My beautiful daughter, I'm never going to see again.
As I'm taping, I just took a look at my phone, and there has been a shooting at Central Michigan University. Two people dead, as I'm speaking right now. So at the listening session that the president decided to hold, there were three types of responses that you generally heard from the crowd. One is like that gentleman right there. Pissed. Just furious. Yeah, my kid's not coming home. I can't imagine, but it's hard. It's hard to even think about any one of my kids. You know, and I've got three beautiful little girls. I try to think about it. I try to think what I would do. How would I carry on? I don't know. And I know that people do all the time. And I suppose I'm not that different. I suppose I'd find a way. But it hurts so much to even think about that I can't even finish the sentence. So we heard three types of responses. We heard anger. We heard sadness and grief. And then, of course, there were a few people that stood up and said, let's arm the teachers. Okay, those are the morons. But the sadness and grief, there was one student there named Sam Zeff that seemed to capture everyone's attention.
I was on the second floor in that building, texting my mom, texting my dad, texting three of my brothers that I was never going to see him again. I turned 18 the day after. Woke up to the news that my best friend was gone. And I don't understand why I could still go in a store and buy a weapon of war. How do we not stop this after Columbine, after Sandy Hook? I'm sitting with a mother that lost her son. It's still happening.
The idea about arming teachers did not start with Trump. It was somewhat floated by the White House, but the way these things are tested out to gauge people's response, and this isn't the first time we've heard it, but they got to retry this line every time. The first way that they try this out is in right-wing media. It'll be on Drudge in print. And then it'll end up on the Blaze's website. And then it'll end up on Rush Limbaugh.
If we allowed the states to independently deal with whatever problems they independently face, we might have some public schools in some states putting armed guards or armed police on premise. I'm not suggesting, I'm just pointing out that somebody might try it. And in so doing, we might find out if it works or not. Right now, there isn't anybody armed at all in these schools except the perps. And the schools themselves are no shoot zones, no gun zones. And the perps all know this. They're sophisticated enough to know this.
When the president had his listening session, he decided to not invite the Never Again kids. So the fact that Sam Zeff got in there is pretty unbelievable. But the Never Again, that's what, hashtag Never Again, that's the campaign, hashtag Never Again. He decided not to invite any of the kids involved in that campaign because he knew that their anger was just going to get, their anger and their activism was going to suck all the oxygen out of the room.
I would just like to say before John speaks is that President Donald Trump did not invite any of us at the Never Again movement there. We're wondering why, if he could respond to us, why didn't he invite us? We're the ones that are talking about it.
At every single thing that I've heard, the idea that just keeps getting perpetuated, no matter who he talks to, arm the teachers, arm the teachers, arm the teachers, arm the teachers. And then he says, hey, we can pay the teachers a little bit more. Pay the teachers a little bit more. There's an article in the NEA magazine this week, which I regularly receive at my house because my wife is an educator. And the headline, the cover story this month is Moonlighting. For some educators working multiple jobs, it's the only way that they can make ends meet. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We're willing to pay them more if they're willing to be trained, if they're willing to be armed, and if they're willing to murder a student. We're willing to pay them more, but we are not willing to pay them more if they simply educate our kids.
And just to pick back up on Hallie and John, mm-hmm. and that 700,000 number, if you give these people bonuses, say $1,000, you're talking about $700 million, potentially. Maybe it's north of $1 billion, maybe it's less than that. In any event, it's a lot of money. Would the federal government pay for something like this? Do you expect the state and local municipalities to pay for this?
The policy hasn't been fleshed out, but, I mean, do we really think that that's too much to pay for school safety?
Ah, we are continually being told that we cannot afford to pay our teachers more because we just don't have the money. But then when it comes to paying teachers to murder students, is that too much to pay so that your students can be safe? So that's Roz Shaw. There are two people that give the press briefings, Roz Shaw and, of course, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And by the way, Roz Shaw is one of the people in the White House, in the West Wing, that does not have a full security clearance right now. He cannot seem to pass a background check for whatever reason. And while Roz Shaw was up there talking about how we should pay teachers more if they're willing to murder students, listen to the words coming out of my mouth. Pay more if they're willing to murder students. Those words are leaving my mouth right now. He said there's another thing. The president also does not like them being called school shootings. Huh? But they're shootings. And they're happening in schools. School shooting. What's the problem there? He says, well, that's kind of a scary term.
I did talk to him about that. I mean, he said that the term active shooter drills is particularly could be frightening for young children. He thinks a drill that's, that has a different name and is not, the brand of it, frankly, doesn't frighten children might be a better way to approach it. Lully.
But just don't call them active shooter drills. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think safety drills, which help in these types of situations, would be more appropriate. The term active shooter drill for a young child could be very frightening.
The problem isn't that your kids have to. And my wife works in a school, and I know several teachers, and they got to do these active shooter drills. And by the way, we're the only country in the world that has to do these things. The only one. Oh, but God, that's such a scary term. You know what's worse than that? Being shot in school. But it's tough getting through to these folks.
If we allowed the states to independently deal with whatever problems they independently face, we might have some public schools in some states putting armed guards or armed police on premise. I'm not suggesting, I'm just pointing out that somebody might try it. And in so doing, we might find out if it works or not. Right now, there isn't anybody armed at all in these schools except the perps. And the schools themselves are no shoot zones, no gun zones. And the perps all know this. They're sophisticated enough to know this.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've heard from the psychos. When we come back, we're going to start to hear from the heroes. From Dick Gregory's book, Defining Moments in Black History, page 73, The Little Rock Nine. Melva Petillo, Beals, Minnie Jean Brown, Elizabeth Eckford, Ernest Green, Gloria Ray Karlmark, Carletta Walls Lanier, Thelma Mothershed, Terrence Roberts, Jefferson Thomas. These nine were a lot like Jackie Robinson when he integrated Major League Baseball. Just like Jackie, they were sent into a place where they would be the only black people. Just like Jackie, they were chosen because they were good at what they did. Just like Jackie, they were told that they couldn't fight back if anybody gave them trouble. Difference was, Jackie was a grown man when he did what he did, and the nine that I've just named were all in their teens in 1957, the year that they integrated the Little Rock Central High School in Arkansas. They were kids. That was a lot to put on kids, even if they were brave. And they were. If they were brave, other folks were acting like fools or worse. In 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled that segregation in public schools was unconstitutional. But after that, it wasn't like the all-white schools were in a race to see who could integrate first. It took the NAACP to get in people's faces and demand desegregation. That was how the school board in Little Rock came up with its plan to integrate Central High first, and then move on to some junior high schools. It chose nine black students because they had good grades and good attendance records. The nine showed up at the school on September 4th, and all hell broke loose. The governor of Arkansas was Orville Faubus. Now, you would have thought that those nine students were the love children of Godzilla and King Kong, the way Faubus reacted to them. He didn't just say he didn't want them in the school. He called out the Arkansas National Guard to make sure that they didn't get in. Not that he needed to. The day that the nine tried to enter the school, racist whites lined the streets holding signs, yelling all kinds of hateful stuff, and even spitting in these poor kids' faces. Those nine kids weren't monsters, but for that mob, they represented something just as scary. The idea that black kids were just as good as their kids. That blacks were people just like them. A world without somebody to look down on was just too horrible for those white folks to think about. Well, what happened in Little Rock made news all over the country, and Dwight Eisenhower was president at the time. And when the whole nation saw what was going on down there, he was forced to act. He federalized the Arkansas National Guard, meaning that instead of doing what Faubus told them to do, they had to do what Ike said. So now, instead of blocking the students from going into the school, the guard had to protect them from the angry mob. Then Ike went one better than that and sent in the 101st Airborne Division of the U.S. Army, minus its black soldiers. Ike must have figured that if whites in Little Rock saw a bunch of uniformed black folks coming at them, they would think that there's another civil war. After 20 days, the nine students were finally able to attend school. But it wasn't as if their problems were over. White students harassed them like it was their job. And most of the time, the National Guard, who had been sent inside the school to protect the 9 students, didn't do a thing. At an age when kids should be thinking about who's going to be their prom date and what colleges they might apply to, those 9 students had to wake up every morning knowing that they had to attend a school full of folks who hated them. Just like Jackie Robinson, the Little Rock 9 made a sacrifice for others. Those kids served their country as much as any soldier. And that's why in 1999, President Bill Clinton gave each of them the Congressional Gold Medal. We have fought a great deal for education, and I find it astounding that young people randomly drop out of school these days because the teacher doesn't like me or other nonsense. Trust me, freedom is found in education. These kids went into that school. They took this task upon themselves. Of course, they were chosen, but they were also brave. And they were told, you're not going to change anything. Even the governor of Arkansas said, you're not going to make anything happen. Arkansas National Guard, the president steps in. You're not going to have integrated schools. Black folk cannot be in here. White folk need somebody to look down on. And those kids went in there. They could have been killed. And there wasn't an officer in that state. There wasn't a governor. There wasn't a mayor. There wasn't anybody who would have said, you know what? Whoever killed those black students should suffer. Nobody. Scary what they walked into. But they refused to accept the way things were. And they said, they're just kids. They're just kids. They can't change anything. They can't inspire any kind of change. They can't do anything. They're just kids. And that's what these kids are being told right now.
The morning after Columbine, the first big assembly was at Light of the World Church, where they got together for the first time. And there were about 20 different officials who spoke, from the community, fire department, superintendent of schools, blah, 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 everything. The kids sat sort of stone face and listened politely, but you could just see them just kind of distraught that all the speeches were sort of like that. And they didn't want to hear that. Kids aren't dumb. Kids are incredibly smart, and they want to know what you're going to do about this. They don't want all these platitudes, oh, we're here to help you, it's going to be all right, blah, 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 blah. They want to know what somebody's going to do. The first person who they reacted to, they stood up and gave a wild standing ovation, was Frank DeAngelis, the principal, who said, this is going to be really hard. This is going to be really rough. It's going to be awful. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but I'm going to be there with you. We're going to get through this together, and then talked about what they were going to do. No bullshit. But here's our plan.
These kids are being told that if they do walkouts, and they're planning any number of walkouts, it's March right now, they're planning a walkout in March, they're planning a walkout in April, and hell, they might walk out every single month, every year, until they see some change. And get the college to start walking out too. And speaking of which, they've been told, if they walk out, a lot of students are being told, if they walk out of school, if they participate in these walkouts, then it's going to hurt their chances to go to college, because this is going to go on their permanent record and this is going to go down as they miss school. So, this from BuzzFeed, colleges are promising high schoolers that getting suspended for protesting guns won't hurt their admission chances. Lots and lots of schools. So, when this article came out, it was dozens, but now it's up to hundreds. Yale University tweeted out, go on, kids, we're behind you. I mean, I'm not quoting here. MIT, Boston University, University of Chicago, Tulane University, Dartmouth College. Dartmouth supports active citizenship and applauds students' expression of their beliefs. George Washington University, GW, supports a student's right to advocate. If you are disciplined or suspended by your school as a consequence, they will not hold it against you. UMass Amherst, students, if you participate in peaceful protests against gun violence and receive school discipline for walking out, we will not hold it against you. And it goes on. Brown University, Northeastern University, Clark University, Smith College, UCLA, we will not hold it against you. Because these colleges know that this is the right thing. But remember, colleges are just bastions of liberalism. These colleges, like the one that George W. Bush spoke at, Virginia Tech, they know that it's not just going to happen in these lower schools. It's not just going to be middle school. It's not going to be grade school. It's not just going to be high school. These are happening in colleges too. And it's so many schools. And they have said, you know what? We're with you, kids. We're not going to hold it against you. Go forth. God is with you.
The opportunist wasted not one second to exploit tragedy for political gain. Saul Alinsky would have been proud. The breakback speed of calls for more gun control laws and the breathless national media eager to smear the NRA.
Quoting from an article here at The Atlantic by Lisa Marie Payne. As I opened the CT scan last week to read the next case, I was baffled. The history read gunshot wound. I've been a radiologist in one of the busiest trauma centers of the nation for 13 years and have diagnosed thousands of handgun injuries to the brain, liver, spleen, bowel, and other vital organs. I thought that I knew all I needed to know about gunshot wounds, but the specific pattern of injury on my computer screen was one that I'd never seen before. See, in a typical handgun injury that I diagnose almost daily, a bullet leaves a laceration through an organ, like the liver. To a radiologist, it appears a linear, thin, gray bullet track through the organ. There might be some bleeding and some bullet fragments. I was looking at a CT of one of the victims of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, who had been brought to the trauma center during my call shift. The organ looked like an overripe melon smashed by a sledgehammer with extensive bleeding. How could a gunshot leave this much damage? The reaction in the emergency room was the same. One of the trauma surgeons opened a young victim in the operating room and found only shreds of the organ that had been hit by a bullet from an AR-15, a semi-automatic rifle which delivers a devastatingly lethal high-velocity bullet to the victim. There was nothing left to repair, and utterly devastating. Nothing that could be done to fix the problem, and the injury turned out to be fatal. We're not dealing with gunshot wounds. We're dealing with bombs exploding in people's bodies. And this is what the American right is telling us that we simply have to accept. And as a matter of fact, we need to start arming our teachers. Let's explore that for a moment. One of the things that I heard discussed this week was in a crisis, you don't react the same. I'm going to use one of my crap analogies, but I'm going to go forward with it. I got a basketball hoop in my backyard. And if I go out there, especially if it's just me, I got nobody on me, I can shoot those twos all day. I can even land a couple of threes. Yeah, I got to work at it a bit, but I can get them, you know, make quite a few shots. But the minute I get a three-on-three or some sort of a pickup game, all of a sudden I'm not making as many shots. I got somebody on me. Now, it's not a crisis, but it's adding stress to the situation. So what we're being told is that these teachers in a crisis situation are going to run towards a shooter, and they're going to hit that shooter. I would suggest to everybody, if you have not shot a gun, go out just one time. You can go to any shooting range, and you can rent a gun, you can buy some bullets, and you go into this room, you know, and you just shoot sort of like, you know, you got partitions on either side, sort of like shooting down a hallway. You know, and you got these targets that you send out, and they come back in, and you shoot at them. Remember the first time I shot a gun? It was a .22, and I sent that target out as far as I could get it out because, god dang it, I had seen so many freaking movies. I'm gonna blow that thing apart, right? And I emptied the gun, and I noticed that the paper didn't move at all. So I started bringing that target back in. And I go, man, so I reload the gun. You know, the guy I was shooting with at the time made his own bullets at home. So, you know, he told me to use as many as I want. And I did. I must have shot 100 bullets that day. And I get it closer. Blam, 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 blam. With a few of those, you know, and I'm not shooting that fast. I mean, I'm trying to measure. I'm trying to look through the sight. Trying to look over the sight. And I notice, you know, I maybe hit the edge of the paper. And I go, bloody hell. It's a little harder than I thought. And it wasn't until I got the paper a lot closer, say within maybe 10, 20 feet, that I was finally able to start hitting. And I go, but if it were a person, if it were a human being from that distance, to have to get that close to somebody, say with a pistol, like a Glock or a 9, to get that close to somebody, and when you're stressed out, when you're in a crisis situation, it's not going to be the same. But I think a lot of people see movies and they go and they see the hero swoop in at the end, shoot the bad guy, dun, 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 and nobody ever misses. And your partner got shot. Oh no, it's just a flesh wound. He's going to live. But that's not what we're dealing with. We're talking about teachers. We're talking about telling our teachers that it's within their job description to murder students.
And this may be 10% or 20% of the population of teachers, etc. It's not all of them, but you would have a lot, and you would tell people that they're inside. And the beauty is it's concealed. Nobody would ever see it unless they needed it. It's concealed. So this crazy man who walked in wouldn't even know who it is that has it. That's good. It's not bad. That's good. And a teacher would have shot the hell out of him before he knew what happened.
That kind of talk. It's movie talk. That kind of stuff gets us excited. We think that that's the way we're going to solve all of our problems.
In the rush of calls for more government, they've also revealed their true selves. The elites don't care not one whit about America's school system and school children. If they truly cared, what they would do is they would protect them. For them, it's not a safety issue. It's a political issue. They care more about control and more of it. They want to sweep right under the carpet the failure of school security, the failure of family, the failure of America's mental health system, and even the unbelievable failure of the FBI.
It's a safety issue and nothing else. They call it a political issue, hoping that they'll be able to distract us. So this school shooting, talk about people who love school shootings. This administration in particular has admitted, it was supposed to be off the record, but it doesn't stay off the record if you say it to another human being. And here's the way it goes. The article is from the Washington Post. And it says, for the weary White House, Florida shooting offered a reprieve from scandals. Domestic abuse allegations against a senior aide were ignored, pointing to a potential high-level cover-up. Two cabinet secretaries were caught charging taxpayers for luxury travel. A Playboy centerfold alleged an extramarital affair with the president, and then the special counsel's Russia investigation was intensifying. The tumult was so intense that there was fervent speculation that President Trump might fire his chief of staff. But a gun massacre at a Florida high school, which left 17 dead, seemed to shift the media glare away from Trump scandals and gave the embattled aides an opportunity to refocus on handling a crisis not of their own making. While the White House mourned the loss of life in Parkland, Florida, some aides privately acknowledged that the tragedy offered a breather from the political storm. A tentative plan for White House Chief of Staff John Kelly to address the news media from the briefing room, where he would have faced intense scrutiny over his role in the mishandling of domestic abuse allegations against a former staffer, was scuttled. One White House official said the shooting forced the White House to focus on critical and serious issues like consoling the victims and trying to heal the nation rather than getting bogged down in what they view as more trivial West Wing drama. Quote, for everyone, it was a distraction or a reprieve, said the White House official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to reflect internal conversations. A lot of people here felt like it was a reprieve from just 7 or 8 days of getting absolutely punished.
Trump's analysis of politics may be right. And the analysis is shamelessness works. You can't shame a person who is unwilling to be shamed. Yeah. All you have to say is, I don't care. Right. That was the lesson of the Billy Bush tape. That was the lesson of the election. When you just read that list of everything that has happened in what, the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks, I was like, gee, you know, I don't even remember these things that what should have been like epic explosions. So we have a presidency that's like a Marvel Comics movie where you within 5 minutes you've forgotten that they just blew up a planet or whatever, you know, whatever tragic event took place, because it's happening at this extraordinary rate. So what we have is a form of a kind of sordid entertainment, but not exactly a moral scandal. And that's, I think, Trump's political thesis. And I think it might be right.
This tactic that's being carried out by the White House is what's known as flooding the zone. And what that is just tragedy after tragedy, scandal after scandal. Just ignore everything. Go, go, go. More, more, more. When you've got 10 or 12 significant news stories breaking in a single day. You can't keep track of all of them flooding the zone. And while this school, just after this school shooting happened, the House of Representatives voted 225 to 192 in favor of a bill that would significantly weaken the landmark Americans with Disability Act and let businesses off the hook for failing to provide accommodations for accessibility. The House voted to gut the ADA while everybody was looking at the mass shooting. And this is one of the toughest things about doing this. Watch these kids. These kids are doing, and I use this phrase even as an atheist, these kids are doing the Lord's work right now. And I've never felt confident that any change is going to happen. I've seen so many school shootings happen. I've covered so many of them on this microphone. With this most recent one, because of the intense research that I do to put these shows together, finding articles, highlighting, piecing them together, doing the audio clips, listening to them over and over and over. This news cycle that's happening right now on a daily basis, this is the first time since I started this show that I have considered quitting doing it because I simply cannot keep up. And I feel like by the time I hit the microphone with the news that I've assembled over the last week or so, I've done shows before where I spent many weeks putting them together. But the shows that I put together in a week, by the time I feel like I put it out, it's already old news. Everything's moved on to something else. But we can't let that happen. This tactic of flooding the zone, this tactic of just overwhelming us and hoping that we'll turn away, that's what they're hoping for. They're not specifically hoping that I stop covering the news because I'm pretty certain they don't even know that I exist. But if it's happening to me and I've got an unhealthy amount of interest in this stuff, imagine what it's doing to the average news consumer. And with these kids, they're doing more things, more of that flooding the zone so that you'll stop paying attention to what's happening in the White House and you'll stop paying attention to what these kids are doing. But we need to remember, none of this is normal. This doesn't happen anywhere in the world. This is American violence.
One of the things that strikes you when you get to Europe, and it's even more pronounced now, is that, you know, this the Europeans in general look at America and they have things they like and things they don't like. But the thing that perplexes them, baffles them, is why America has this phenomenon, mass shootings, gun violence in general, and particularly the school shootings. And when you talk to criminologists and people who have studied this matter on an international level, what they will point out to you again and again, and it's one of the fundamental truisms that people kind of don't always get, is that other countries are just as violent as America is. Violence is not an American phenomenon. You can find violence in a lot of Western industrialized countries. It's just that the violence that breaks out at a pub in London or at a bar in Berlin or any place else in the developed world, that violence does not end up being lethal because of the fact that they don't have as many guns.
I'm hearing blame be put on video games. I'm hearing blame be put on movies. And maybe those things play a role. But guess what? Those video games are released in other countries. Those movies are released in other countries. Mental health issues exist in other countries. The big thing, we don't have more of it here in America than they do. We've got the same. Even with the rates of mental illness, we have the same. The only difference between us and them is access to guns. For facts sake.
As is the case with most tragedies, we're hearing from lawmakers, and this one is no different. Louisiana Republican Senator Bill Cassidy tweeted his sympathy and prayers, saying his heart goes out to the victims and their families. But for fact's sake, according to the Nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics, the NRA spent more than $2.8 million on Cassidy throughout his career. That includes campaign funding and ads attacking opponents. Ohio Republican Senator Rob Portman tweeted about the heartbreaking news, sending his prayers. Portman has benefited from $3 million in support from the National Rifle Association. Iowa Republican Joni Ernst asked her followers to join in prayer for those at the school and thanked first responders. But The NRA boosted Ernst election efforts to the tune of $3.1 million. Right here, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who sought the Republican nomination for president in 2016 and spent the day tweeting updates, called it a terrible day you pray never comes. His campaign has benefited from $3.3 million in funding and opposition attacks, thanks to the National Rifle Association. Colorado Senator Cory Gardner tweeted his heartbreak for the situation and, once again, prayers for first responders. But $3.9 million of NRA funds have been spent to boost his campaigns and attack his opponents. Arizona Republican John McCain tweeted his prayers just a short time ago. The National Rifle Association has spent more than $7.7 million on John McCain, the most of any lawmaker by far. Florida Governor Rick Scott ordered flags lowered to half staff, calling the shooting a senseless tragedy. Scott, who is up for re-election this year, enjoys an A-plus rating from the National Rifle Association. Vice President Mike Pence tweeted about heartache and prayers in the wake of the shooting. He has an A-plus rating with the NRA and enacted a number of laws as governor of Indiana, including legislation allowing firearms to be kept in vehicles on school property. President Trump tweeted his prayers, adding, quote, "No child, teacher, or anyone else should ever feel unsafe in an American school." The NRA spent more than $21 million supporting Trump in the 2016 election, almost $10 million on ads and other pro-Trump material, and $12 million attacking Hillary Clinton. The thoughts and prayers are with the victims. The dollars and cents are another story.
We're being lied to by the president. We're being lied to by conservative politicians. We're being lied to by the NRA. We're being lied to by any number of media outlets. And in the words of Emma Gonzalez,
they say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS. They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS. They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS.
All lies matter. All lies matter. And it's time for this one to die. Too many of our kids have been killed because of this lie. It is time for us to shift our focus and stick with it this time, to say that this is going to be the last mass shooting, and don't be afraid to get behind these kids. I think these kids are really onto something. We don't have the adults in charge right now, because they have decided that this is an acceptable price to pay for people to have unfettered gun access. A bunch of dead first graders, that's acceptable. A bunch of dead teenagers, that's acceptable. A bunch of concert goers, that's acceptable. A bunch of people in church, that's an acceptable price to pay for unfettered access to weapons of war. We can't allow the zone to be flooded. We can't be overwhelmed in this moment. And we cannot lose focus. We've got to get behind these kids. We are going to look back, and this will be the time, and this will be where history took a turn. If we're lucky, this will be the last mass shooting, in a school at least. But I know how incredibly unlikely that is. But that doesn't make the objective any less likely or any less important. Let's back these kids. Never again. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official homes, tfycbo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycbo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android listeners. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, bring it on, kids. Or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycbo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. And we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. And thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.